IB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Here's a look at our top stories this hour. Tehran has summoned the Danish ambassador to lodge a strong protest over the attack on Iran's embassy in Copenhagen. Israeli forces shoot dead two Palestinians, including a 14-year-old, in the occupied West Bank. And North Korea says its missile tests are in self-defense and in response to U.S. provocation. Thank you for joining us. Tehran has summoned a Danish ambassador over an attack by a knife-wielding assailant on the Iranian embassy in Copenhagen. The foreign ministry says it lodged a strong protest with the ambassador over Denmark's failure to protect the embassy and its diplomats. Meanwhile, foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani has cited the attack and other incidents at Iranian diplomatic missions in Europe over the past weeks. He says the link between such acts of violence and the West's political support for rioters in Iran is undeniable. On Friday morning, an assailant broke into the Iranian embassy in Copenhagen. He tried to stab the ambassador, but he was stopped by a staffer. The assailant injured the staffer and damaged vehicles in the parking lot, being arrested by the Danish police. The aftermath of anti-Iran violence in London continues to be keenly felt by the institutions and individuals who found themselves at its epicenter. One of the most shocking episodes of mindless violence occurred outside the famed Islamic Center where worshippers had gathered to mark a special religious program. As the Metropolitan Police continued to search for the perpetrators, Amina Taylor spoke with two people at the very heart of the story.
It was the night chaos and violence came to England's Islamic Center as marauding crowds, intent on raising more than their voices, lay siege to the usually peaceful premises. More than a week later, there is still evidence of the violence that boiled over. Amongst the victims that night was a longtime Quran teacher at the center who was set upon by a baying mob.
Suddenly the people, so many people were there standing and started calling me and swearing and shouting, stay, and surrounded me. And the other people came, starting hitting me, kicking me, and swearing, just without stopping. And I couldn't understand. I was so surprised from them. So how can the people become this violent? One of them, he kicked me from the over my kidney, and I still have a problem with my kidney. And I went to the hospital, saw the doctor, and my knee as well. So it just had very big scratch in my knees and bloodying. I still have problems with my leg, right leg, and I can't walk properly. After this 10 days, more than 10 days.
Said Mousavi is the director of the center and is leading the charge for justice.
The Islamic Center is following its legal path, and a case against the riots has been filed, and it is ongoing based on document and evidence.
Days after violence rocked the Islamic Center, there is still a visible police presence. And whilst those inside do everything they can to protect themselves and their loved ones, it's hoped that should there be a repeat of this atrocity, the authorities will do more.
Until those responsible are brought to account, there are still questions.
But why they did that in that time, I was so surprised. I think it wasn't only one group. I think there were very small groups of the people who were against Islam and against the humanity, and against the kindness, against... I think they were like this, some of them.
There's now a call for calm and dialogue as the only paths forward.
If you want people listen to you and respect your idea, you should respect the idea of the other as well. That is why I want to ask them, please come and talk and have a dialogue with each other. And then with the dialogue, we can listen to different ideas. And of course, even in Quran, we have a specific advice that tells us you should listen to different words and choose the best. But different word, not different attack.
Meanwhile, the Metropolitan Police is continuing its identification of individuals responsible for the anti-Iran violence that spilled over on British streets. Amina Taylor, London.
Delegations from the Caspian littoral states have gathered in the Russian capital to participate in the second Caspian Economic Forum. The event has become the largest platform in the post-pandemic period to discuss topics including cooperation among member states. Marina Kurtunova reports from Moscow.
The second Caspian Economic Forum has been held in Moscow. During the event, issues including developing trade and economic cooperation, interaction in the field of ecology, energy, transport, and logistics were discussed. Delegations from the Caspian five littoral states, namely Russia, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Iran, and Azerbaijan, were present at the event.
The countries of the Caspian region will have to work in the current turbulent conditions of the global economy and geostrategic tensions. The West is putting increasing pressure on other countries in an attempt to maintain the existing world order.
The Caspian region possesses a significant part of the world's gas and oil reserves. It is of high significance, especially at a time when the whole world is facing an unprecedented energy crisis. The Iranian authorities came up with a new proposal to address those issues.
In order to unify and harmonize tariffs for rail, road and sea transportation, expanding trade and economic cooperation, we propose to establish a committee for cooperation in the field of transport, transit and customs business.
The Islamic Republic, given its geographical location, has very good opportunities to conduct operations in the oil and gas sector, as well as providing energy supplies to other regions. Iran has stressed the need to accelerate the unification of the country's electric power networks with those of the Caspian states.
The main purpose of this forum is boosting the economy of regional countries and to enable the Caspian states to use their opportunities to develop trade and economic cooperation, culture and tourism. Also, everyone should not only use the opportunities of the Caspian Sea, but also protect it. We are actively working in the development of the North-South Transport Corridor. The shipping lines of the Islamic Republic of Iran have allocated 300 containers for the transportation of goods to Russia.
Apart from what was said and proposed at the event, the forum also had good news for the member states. Cruise shipping on the Caspian Sea is set to begin in 2023 for the first time in history.
More than 1,000 delegates from the five Caspian Sea littoral states, as well as Belarus, Kyrgyzstan and Uzbekistan, have taken part in the forum. In the meeting, the participants agreed to adopt decisions to enhance all-out cooperation among countries in the Caspian region. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Israeli forces have killed two Palestinian teenagers in the occupied West Bank. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, to get more details about the killings. Let's take a listen.
The Israeli soldiers have killed two Palestinian teens in different and separate incidents. The first one, 14-year-old Adel Dawood, was shot dead by the Israeli soldiers. The Israelis claim that Palestinians were holding a protest against the seizure of Palestinian land in Qalqilia, and then Palestinians went to protest near the Israeli separation wall, where Israeli military checkpoint is there as well. and the clashes have taken place there, and the Israeli forces opened fire towards Palestinians, killing this 14-year-old Palestinian teenager. Elsewhere in the occupied West Bank near Ramallah in Al-Mazra'a Al-Gharbiya town, Palestinians have protested and rushed to the streets of this village, Al-Mazra'a Al-Gharbiya, in order to face an attack by Israeli settlers. Group of Israeli settlers have raided Al-Mazra'a Al-Gharbiya town, and they were throwing the stones against a Palestinian house there. Of course, as usual, the Israeli soldiers were protecting the Israeli settlers. They opened fire at the Palestinians, wounding at least one, wounding at least two. When the Palestinians were transferred to hospital, one of them, 17-year-old Mahdi Ladadwi, succumbed to his injuries. The Palestinian presidency and the Palestinian authority and the different Palestinian political and Islamic powers have denounced the killing of those two Palestinian teens and said that the Palestinians will continue to resist the Israeli forces and the Israeli military because this is a natural response, resistance and struggle to the ongoing and non-stop crimes being committed by the Israeli soldiers.
A mass rally has been held in the Gaza Strip to mark the 35th anniversary of the establishment of the Islamic Jihad movement. The movement that refuses to recognize the Israeli regime while maintaining armed resistance as the only way to liberate Palestine. Ashraf Shannon reports.
Thousands of Palestinians have rallied in the blockaded Gaza Strip to mark the 35th anniversary of the outset of the Islamic Jihad movement. People from all walks of life joined to show their support. The Islamic Jihad movement is highly respected by all Palestinian factions and has always been a uniting factor among them. The movement was founded by the late Dr. Fathi Shaqaqi, who was inspired by the Iranian Revolution and the teachings of the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini.
Today we pay tribute to our founder Fathi Shaqaqi and all the martyrs. Our path is a very long one and paved by the blood of martyrs who sacrificed their lives for the sake of Islam and for the sake of Al-Quds.
Ziyad Al-Nakhala, the Secretary General of Islamic Jihad, addressed the attendees via satellite link. During his speech, Al-Nakhala stressed the unity among all Palestinian factions and praised the axis of resistance against the Israeli regime.
Gaza is part of the axis of resistance, and this rally stresses that armed resistance is the key to the liberation of Al-Quds and all of Palestine. People attending this event are affirming their allegiance to the resistance and to the Islamic Jihad movement.
The Islamic Jihad movement and its leaders remain blacklisted by the European Union and the United States for refusing to recognize the Israeli regime.
We are all here to support the resistance against the Zionist regime. Our people are sending a strong message to the whole world today about their unwavering support for the resistance. We will continue our struggle until the liberation of Al-Quds.
Islamic Jihad supporters want the Israeli regime to know that their movement is a force to be reckoned with.
35 years on, the popularity of the Islamic Jihad movement continues to grow due to the movement's strict adherence to armed resistance against the Israeli regime. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
North Korea says its missile tests are for self-defense against direct U.S. military threats as tensions run high on the Korean Peninsula. A North Korean aviation official says the launches have not harmed the safety of neighboring countries and regions. The International Civil Aviation Organization Council recently condemned the missile tests. It said they pose a serious safety risk to international civil aviation. North Korea has fired six missiles in the past 2 weeks amid what Pyongyang sees as Washington's provocations. The U.S. and South Korea held joint maritime exercises involving an aircraft carrier on Friday. Washington has also announced new sanctions in response to North Korea's latest missile launches. Europe is feeling the pinch of an acute energy crunch amid tensions with Russia over the war in Ukraine. The French president has now warned that the winter of 2023-2024 will be even harder than the coming winter for Europeans in terms of gas supplies. Emmanuel Macron says Europe will intensify talks with gas suppliers and coordinate with big Asian partner countries on gas purchases. He was speaking at a summit of European state leaders in the Czech Republic, where they are discussing a gas pricing system to protect their consumers from rising energy bills. The majority of EU states backed the cap on gas prices, but Denmark, Germany, and the Netherlands are opposed to the move. They say the measure would make it difficult to buy the gas their economies need and curb any incentive to reduce consumption. Homeless charities in the EU say they are at breaking point due to a spike in the number of people seeking support. A conference in Brussels fears the crisis is set to worsen this winter due to growing inflation and interest rates. Jerome Hughes reports from the Belgian capital.
Leading experts at this European Economic and Social Committee conference in Brussels on Friday said homelessness in the EU has increased by 70% in the past decade. A conservative estimate suggests there are 700,000 homeless people across the 27-country bloc.
We see now with the energy poverty and the increasing vulnerability that are happening around Europe that we are very, very concerned that those figures will also be increasing further. And that's why we believe that it's really important that we all join forces.
Young adults in precarious jobs are in one of the highest risk categories. If you have a mortgage, then repayments are going up due to interest rate hikes. If a landlord has a mortgage, they are passing on extra charges to tenants. Homeless people don't vote. So is there an incentive for politicians to take action?
If in such a short time so much can be done for Ukrainian refugees, and also if so much could be done for homeless people during the corona pandemic, I think we can do the same in the future. It's just a question of political will.
Those who have experienced being homeless say it's a very difficult situation to escape from.
Everybody thinks you are a little bit shady or something like that, and nobody trusts you, and you don't trust anybody. When people start to trust me, I start to doing better things for me, for myself.
Critics say the current economic crisis and resulting social misery could have been avoided if EU leaders had prevented the war in Ukraine through diplomacy. It has been suggested by some political commentators one way the EU could ease its growing homelessness crisis would be for Western nations to adopt a foreign policy that is less aggressive, which would avoid further displacement of millions of more people. Jerome Hughes at the European Economic and Social Committee, Brussels.
That's a wrap for this hour's World News. Thank you for staying tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Britain's Chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng is to bring forward a fiscal statement later this month amid disquiet within the Conservative Party over spending cuts hitting the poorest sections of society. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has more on this story. Conservative MPs are plotting to avert a squeeze on welfare after Prime Minister Liz Truss was forced into two humiliating U-turns on plans to abolish the top rate of income tax and the date of a new mini-budget. The Guardian understands Kwasi Kwarteng will speed up plans for a new fiscal statement expected to focus on spending and deregulation. It will now take place later this month, rather than on 23rd of November as previously scheduled, accompanied by new forecasts from the Office of Budget Responsibility, OBR, in another move designed to restore market stability and confidence. Senior MPs warned of further rebellions over reductions in public spending, especially on benefits, which the Chancellor has declined to rule out. The threat came as the Institute for Fiscal Studies and the Resolution Foundation said there would need to be significant cuts in public spending unless there were further U-turns on policies announced in the mini-budget last month. In a brief and abashed Tory conference speech, Kwasi Kwarteng admitted it had been a tough day, hours after rowing back on the tax cut for high earners. He said his economic plan had caused a little turbulence. Kwarteng said the government was committed to its radical agenda and would move soon to deregulate sectors including childcare, agriculture, immigration, planning and financial services. But he also said the government would take fiscal discipline seriously, saying they were absolutely committed to being serious custodians of the public purse. Prime Minister Liz Truss and Chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng decided to ditch the cut to the 45% tax rate the night before the Conservative Party conference in Birmingham, when the scale of the rebellion by Conservative MPs made it clear it would not survive a parliamentary vote, with many other tough battles to come. Cabinet ministers said they believed it was the right decision. "I think we came into contact with the inevitable," one concluded. Another said there was a clear need to return to a more rigorous system of cabinet discussions and responsibility and hinted that a shake-up at No. 10 Downing Street was in the works. "We have not had true cabinet government since the days of Margaret Thatcher. That needs to change." But both MPs echoed economists in warning that the reversal of the abolition of the top rate of income tax would make little difference to the state of the public finances, and said they were concerned about what spending cuts would need to be announced. Mel Stride, the chair of the Treasury Select Committee, said there were significant issues that remained, even though the U-turn was welcome. "It may be that there will be even yet further requirements to unwind some of those positions," he said. The Resolution Foundation said that despite Monday's U-turn, the richest households in Britain would still gain almost 40 times as much as the poorest families from policies announced in Kwasi Kwarteng's mini-budget. The Al Jazeera television network has more on the same story. The United Kingdom's government has reversed plans to cut the country's highest rate of income tax, marking a humiliating U-turn for Prime Minister Liz Truss's new administration. Monday's move came after more than a week of turmoil in the financial markets, which saw the pound plummet to record lows following Chancellor of the Exchequer Kwasi Kwarteng's so-called mini-budget, announced on 23rd of September. The package of measures was aimed at boosting growth by cutting on taxes and regulation, funded by vast government borrowing, and included a proposal to scrap the top 45% rate of income tax paid on earnings above £150,000 a year. But the plan triggered a crisis of investor confidence in the government, jolting global markets to such an extent that the Bank of England had to intervene with a £65 billion programme to shore up the markets. Announcing the government's U-turn, Chancellor Kwasi Kwarteng said the proposal to slash the top rate of income tax, which made up about £2 billion out of the overall £45 billion tax-cutting plan, had become a distraction from our overriding mission to tackle the challenges facing our country. "We get it and we have listened," he said in a statement released hours before he was due to give a keynote speech at a Conservative Party conference in Birmingham. The decision to reverse course is likely to put Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng under huge political pressure less than 4 weeks after they came to power. Britain has had four prime ministers in the last six politically turbulent years. Liz Truss, a 47-year-old former foreign minister who took office on 6 September after winning a leadership contest among Conservative members and not the country, said on Sunday that she should have done more to lay the ground for the tax cut plan. Several senior Conservative legislators had come out publicly against the policy, saying cutting government spending and hiking borrowing to fund tax cuts for the richer section of the population was politically risky during a pressing cost-of-living crisis.
Food for thought.
Salam, and we felicitate you all on the blessed 10th of the month of Rabiul Awwal, the wedding anniversary of the Prophet of Islam and the virtuous lady Hazrat Khadijatul Kubra, peace upon them. Here is a famous saying from the Prophet in memory of the First Lady of Islam, who was his only wife for 25 long years. "By God, the Almighty did not grant me a better wife than her. She believed in me when people used to mock at me, and she acknowledged me when people denied me. She shared her wealth and property with me, and she bore me children which I was not destined to have through other women."
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, faithfulness towards friend. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. Now, in today's lesson, I would like to share with you about a certain topic, an important topic, and that is faithfulness towards a friend. How important is faithfulness during any type of friendship or any type of relationship that we're having? Friendship needs faithfulness. Why? Because your friend or a friend that you're having is someone who you live together with in a long period of time. In a day, a human being can be living with friends maybe more than he is living with his friends. Because whenever you're leaving your house in the morning, you're going for the workplace, and you're staying at your workplace, let's say like 12 hours, 15 hours, 24 hours, you're definitely living more with those people at the workplace than you are living with your family back at home. So this definitely shows that you need to have the right amount, the good amount of friends in your life. And whenever you have these particular friends, the one you're working with, the one you're playing with in the playground, in football, wherever it is, you need to practice faithfulness between you two, because the amount of quality time you're spending together is going to bring out more fruits if you're faithful with each other. Because faithfulness brings about good relationship, and good relationship brings about good results in life and definitely builds you to be a better person than you are. Whenever you leave in the morning, you come, you meet your friends, you sit with each other together, share your views with each other, share whatever you have with each other in a faithful manner. It's definitely going to make you two become better companions and be successful in your lives.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano, and we're talking about the faithfulness towards a friend and how important it is in our lives. We have examples of faithfulness in the lives of the Prophet, in the lives of the Imams, or the holy Imams. And one of the examples that we want to talk about of faithfulness is that of the holy Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. It was reported from him, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, that his wife Khadija, may Allah be pleased with her, had friends in her life. When Khadija died, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam used to remember her friends and presented them with gifts. It was reported that whenever he slaughtered a ram, he used to say, "Send it to the friends of Khadija." Then one day, Aisha asked him why he was doing this. He replied, "Because I love her friend." This surely shows us that a friend is he who is faithful to his friend and never abandons him at the time of difficulties and need. Faithfulness is really important during our relationship and our friendship. And he will never, whenever you do such like thing, such a faithful act, he will never forget you or forget your deed when he gets a social position. So faithfulness here, this particular happening, this particular story of the Prophet sharing things with the friends of Khadija shows that whenever you are faithful to someone, you aren't just looking at them. You're looking at them and the people he or she loves. You're looking at them and their families, their friends, the people they're living with, their colleagues. So being faithful to them means that you can help them whenever you have the ability to help them. And you can also not just help them, but you can help their friends too, their relations, their sons or daughters. And in this case, we realize that our relationship becomes bigger and better, and they won't be breaking as we see they do in our day-to-day life. So faithfulness is a practice that every person in whatever relationship he is in should practice in order for them to better their relationship. Thank you so much for listening to this show. Until next episode, inshallah, fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Robots are slowly but surely becoming part of everyday life, taking on human roles in different areas. Now, fast food restaurants can make French fries faster and better as a robot called Flippy 2 takes over the job.
When an order comes in through the restaurant system, it automatically spits out the instructions to Flippy. Takes a frozen product, fries it for the precise amount of time, and puts the finished product in the end. It does it faster, more accurately, more reliably, and happier than most humans do it.
Flippy 2 has been created in a robotic lab in California called MISO after 5 years of efforts by its developers. According to the project engineers, a really good understanding of the food science is needed to make sure the food quality is there, how different food sticks together, and how the temperature and heat affect it. The MISO CEO says the machine can cook several meals with different recipes simultaneously, removing the need for catering staff.
This technology utilizes a whole bunch of computer vision. There's cameras throughout the system, including right here we have these food identification cameras. The cameras not only guide the robot and tell it exactly where it is in space and how to move through this area, but also identifies the food type and it knows the recipe for each one.
The MISO CEO says tasks like the fry station are the kind that humans are most happy to offload. The name Flippy comes from the original machine designed to flip burgers, which was not very useful for restaurants. On the outskirts of China's metropolis, Shanghai, a tiny island has been dubbed Cat Island as it provides shelter for stray animals. Since it opened last month, a charity based on the island is taking in cats mainly brought from Shanghai residents. These small carnivorous mammals are neutered and evaluated, and those with good temper and health are allowed to roam free on the island. The city's Stray Cats Management Center says their trap-neuter-release policy is to protect stray cats, limits their population, and maintain ecological balance. However, Shanghai has an estimated 200 stray cats per square kilometer, which means other methods will be needed to control the urban population, stray cats. A pair of baby panda twins make their debut appearance at the Chongqing Zoo in southwest China, with visitors flocking to cherish the abundance of cuteness.
Our returnee panda, Ershan, gave birth to the twin brother and sister on July 22nd this year. Currently, the elder brother weighs 4.3 grams and the younger sister weighs 0.6 grams. They're in good condition at present.
The twins' first public appearance was on Saturday, the first day of the week-long National Day holidays. During this week, the pair of giant panda cubs will be on display in the nursery of the panda house of the zoo. Their mother, Ershan, once lived in Canada as a goodwill envoy, but returned to her homeland in 2020. This was Ershan's second delivery of twins. A total of 21 pandas currently live in the Chongqing Zoo, which has been breeding giant pandas since the 1960s. The evolution of robots has been one of the fascinations of recent technological developments. And now the most cutting-edge achievements in that department were presented to the public during a conference in Beijing. The four-day annual World Robot Conference was held both offline and online. It featured three major events, including forum, expo, and competition. On display were more than 500 sets of robots from 130 companies from China and abroad. The conference gave an idea of how the future of humanity will be impacted by the automations. It shows how they can contribute to different sectors, from the restaurant industry and medicine to elderly care, agriculture, and manufacturing. An aircraft powered by electricity may still be some way off, but one of its types is already here thanks to a whole range of innovative solutions being developed by aviation firms. American company Aviation Aircraft has debuted its all-electric plane in Washington State. The aircraft, named Alice, took off the runway at Grand County International Airport and flew for 8 minutes. It reached an altitude of 3,500 feet before touching down the ground. According to the company, the aircraft produces no carbon emissions, significantly reduces noise, and costs a fraction to operate compared to usual light jets. The company says it continues to develop and tweak the plane's battery system for an hour flight.
We're targeting a design criteria of 35 minutes for a charge. And so that'll be a charge for the typical route length. It's actually, as I just said, it's actually a design point. So going back to the comment I made earlier about designing batteries for aircraft, it's one of the considerations is how quickly do we want it to charge and how much power do you want to be able to draw from it. So again, we're targeting call it 30 minutes of charge for an hour of flight time, or about 2C if you're...
The company aims to find its way into the market for trips that sit between 150 and 250 miles, a range that features aircraft similar in size to Alice. It will also be for both commuter and cargo flights. For aircraft manufacturers, this paradigm shift is driving fuel savings in flight and on the ground, reducing carbon footprints and NOx emissions, while also improving reliability and cutting maintenance costs.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Many people of the world are supported almost completely by animals because they live in areas unsuitable for animal husbandry. But these days, even some city dwellers are making their living out of animals, like a Virginia girl. Andrea Diaz quit her job at a restaurant and started to rent her pet alpacas to cheer up steer crazy Americans during the pandemic. Since the launch of her business in 2020, it has expanded from 2 to 14 alpacas. Interestingly, 5 with fluffy pets are regularly making a paid appearance at birthdays, weddings, restaurants, and offices. She charges a starting price of $95 per hour. Diaz says the best part is when there are kids' birthday parties, but even it's really a fun for the adults. She calls alpacas a good exposure because they attract people.
In most of us,
habitats, the heavily trafficked pangolin faces the biggest threat from humans. But in Taiwan, these gentle creatures are exposed to quite a different danger, feral dogs. In the island, a government policy has led to a surge in the population of feral dogs. The pangolins share most of their roaming area with the stray animals. Plus, these scaly animals cannot move as fast as their attackers. When faced with danger, pangolins curl themselves into a ball shape, but the tail still remains at the most outer side, and that's where the dogs hit them hard.
Ecuador's Galapagos National Park is testing different coral replanting methods in an effort to restore fragile underwater ecosystems around local islands.
These corals are important because they are recyclers in the ocean. They convert all the CO2 into oxygen. These corals are important because they are refuge, nurseries, and nursery areas for some fish species.
Coral reef die-offs affect the marine food supply chains and are considered a major climate tipping point. The experimental project is run by park rangers and volunteers in a bay on Santa Cruz Island. Since 2020, they have tested how corals reproduce when they are placed on surfaces like bricks, cement, or tied together in strong and metal frames. They're growing samples in a nursery before adding them to bay. The rangers are reporting improvements with the appearance of new fish near the replanted corals.
A free climber known as the French Spider-Man scales a 48-story skyscraper in Paris to fulfill a goal he set for himself once he reached the age of 60.
A few years back, I promised myself that the day I turned 60, I have to climb the total tower. Because 60 years old marks retirement age in France, and so I thought this would make a very good nod.
Alain Roberts says this building is not as hard as others he has climbed. The French Spider-Man has ascended over 100 of the world's tallest buildings, including the Sydney Tower, the Sears Tower in Chicago, and the Burj Khalifa in Dubai, amongst many others. Roberts says he spent 2 decades climbing mountains before attempting urban climbs. Using his rock climbing experience, he sometimes carries a small bag of climbing chalk to help him grasp the small protrusions of building walls. Many of his climbs can last several hours. The 60-year-old daredevil says he wants to give people the message that age is a number and one can still be active and do sports. A Palestinian farmer has discovered an ancient Byzantine-era mosaic when preparing to plant an olive tree on his plot of land in the Gaza Strip. The farmer and his son have been carefully excavating the area for 3 months since spring. The pair dug out 3 patches, revealing glimpses of an ornate mosaic with intricate images of birds, flora, and tile patterns. Its full size is roughly 23 square meters. The discovery has set off excitement amongst archaeologists. Experts say it is one of the most well-preserved specimens with precision in graphics and richness in colors. According to archaeologists, the mosaic pavement dates back to the 5th and 7th centuries. Last month, another Palestinian farmer found the rare stone sculpture while working on his land, which dates back to around 2500 BC.
They're back as India has revealed or released several of them into the grasslands of Kuna National Park after a 70-year absence in the country. The eight radio-collared African cheetahs made the long journey from Namibia. The big cats were released during a ceremony by Prime Minister Narendra Modi that coincided with his birthday. After their acclimation in the national park, they will be released into a 5-hectare spread of land in central India, covered by grassland and forest. The felines will share the landscape with other animals and roam with leopards, sloths and striped hyenas. Their reintroduction is the culmination of a 13-year effort to restore the species, which vanished from the country decades ago. Another 12 cheetahs are expected to join the fledgling Indian population next month from South Africa. With more funding, the country hopes to gradually increase the population of cheetahs to around 40.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement has criticized Zionist regime's crimes against innocent Palestinian prisoners, saying that the martyrdom of some prisoners in jail reflects the policy of lingering killing of detainees in Israeli prisons. Palestinian detainees have endlessly resorted to open-ended hunger strikes in an attempt to express outrage at their illegal administrative detention. Zionist regime jails authorities keep Palestinian prisoners under dire conditions without proper hygienic and health standards. Palestinian inmates have also been subject to systematic torture, harassment, and repression. Human rights organizations say the Zionist regime violates all the rights and freedoms granted to Palestinian prisoners by the Fourth Geneva Convention. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media to shed more light on the issue. Stay with us to hear more about the story. The website of Middle East Eye has published an article concerning this issue, saying Palestinian groups have charged Israeli regime with medical negligence that led to the martyrdom of prisoner Musa Harun Abu Mohammed on Saturday, September 3rd. According to the Palestinian Prisoners Club, PPC, the 40-year-old was detained 2 months ago while attempting to enter the city of Al-Quds from the occupied West Bank for work. Israeli forces claimed he did not have a permit to work in Al-Quds at the time. His family said he was suffering from a neurological disorder before his arrest and that his condition deteriorated in jail. He was transferred to Asaf Hurweh Hospital at the beginning of August. The PPC said that Israeli authorities informed the family of Abu Mohammed that his body would be handed back for burial later on Saturday, September 3rd. The PPC noted in a statement Abu Mohammed was subjected to the crime of deliberate medical negligence. Abu Mohammed's martyrdom comes days after some 1,000 Palestinian prisoners suspended their hunger strike after Israeli prison authorities accepted to their demands to reverse harsh measures imposed across prisons for months. The strike was part of a series of escalating steps the prisoners had adopted since February amid the Israeli refusal to respond to their demands to reverse measures taken against them following the escape of six prisoners from the Gilboa prison in September last year. Palestinian rights groups charged Israeli prison services of adopting a systematic policy of deliberate medical negligence against Palestinian detainees. Palestinian Center for Human Rights website pchrgaza.org wrote, Abu Mohammed's martyrdom sheds the light on the general deterioration of Palestinian detainees' conditions in the Israeli jails, as there are 7,000 Palestinians, including 175 children and 32 women, detained in 23 prisons and detention facilities inside the occupied territories, in inhuman and cruel conditions that lack the standard minimum rules of the treatment of prisoners and detainees in detention. Among the detainees, there are 600 ill detainees. Some of them suffer chronic and serious diseases. According to the Commission of Detainees and Ex-Detainees Affairs, 231 security detainees have attained martyrdom in the Israeli prisons, including dozens who have martyred due to medical negligence policy since 1967. PCHR hereby holds the Israeli occupation authorities fully responsible for the martyrdom of Palestinian detainee Mohammed, who is the fourth detainee attained martyrdom in Israeli jails since the beginning of 2022, and for the lives of hundreds of ill detainees who would face the same fate if the policy of deliberate medical negligence continued, especially under the unhealthy imprisonment conditions where prisoners are denied adequate health care. Similarly, the Palestinian Center for Human Rights, PCHR, said, calls for a prompt and impartial investigation into Mohammed's martyrdom circumstances are needed. It also calls upon the International Committee of Red Crescent, ICRC, to intensify and ensure efficacy of their follow-up of the conditions of Palestinian detainees in Israeli jails and their imprisonment conditions. Also, it calls upon the international community to compel Israel to respect the rules of the international law and international humanitarian law, in particular the Fourth Geneva Convention and the UN standard minimum rules for the treatment of prisoners. Moreover, SaveTheChildren.org said, children in the Israeli military detention system face inhumane treatment such as beatings, strip searches, psychological abuse, weeks in solitary confinement, and being denied access to a lawyer during interrogations. The charity Save the Children consulted more than 470 children from across the West Bank who have been detained over the past 10 years. It found that most children were taken from their homes at night, blindfolded with their hands painfully bound behind their backs. Many of the respondents said they were not told why they were being arrested or where they were being taken. Every year, hundreds of Palestinian children are detained by Israeli authorities. They are the only children in the world who are systematically prosecuted through military rather than civilian courts. The most common charge is throwing stones, for which the maximum sentence is 20 years in prison. After this arrest, children are transferred to interrogation centers where they report being forced to lie face down on the metal floor of military vehicles, denied bathroom breaks, deprived of food and water, and physically assaulted. Children described the detention experience as torturous, dehumanizing, humiliating, and terrifying. Save the Children's consultation showed that 81% endured physical beatings and 89% suffered verbal abuse. 52% were threatened with harm to their families. 86% were subjected to strip searches, leaving them humiliated and ashamed. 88% did not receive adequate and timely health care, even when explicitly requested, and almost half, 47%, were denied contact with a lawyer. Save the Children asked the Zionist regime to respect international law and to end the detention and mistreatment of the innocent children and other Palestinian detainees under military law. Israeli authorities must immediately